Yes, this is Resonance 104.4 FM in Central London and around the world, resonancefm.com. That was Wavelength. This is a strangely disconnected technical difficulties. I've had those of my own. The guest I was hoping to speak to from New York is not available to join us at this moment, and so for the next half an hour you will be engaging with exactly how I see this city as a disabled person, since I don't think I have actually explained to anyone the specifics of my condition and how they interact with London as a city. My guest was Christine, founded a community by virtue of explaining to a friend of hers how her condition manifested itself in terms of explaining chronic illness, and other people read The Spoon Theory, which is available at butyoudon'tlooksick.com, and adopted this label of spoony as a way of identifying themselves and of explaining that fundamentally things that take normal lengths of time for a non-disabled person take more energy and possibly more time if you are disabled, particularly with chronic illnesses, where the cumulative effect of hitting that floor and picking yourself up again, either literally or figuratively, takes its toll after a while. I've had 28 years of life, about 25 of which I would argue have been in the realm of normal societal interaction, and about 3 or 4 have been very painful and have led me to adopt that spoony label myself. Just as an illustration, if you think through every process that you do in the course of a day, most of them require multiple actions. And it is very much a characteristic of disabled life that those multiple actions frequently require to be consciously thought through or done differently and more in a more complicated manner than they are set up for within society. As an example, most people wake up, get out of bed, go to work, and they wouldn't describe those activities in individual steps. There are days when spoonies that I've spoken to, and there are days when this applies to me, where the juggling is between eating and having a shower before you exhaust the energy available to you at that point of the day and would therefore have to rest. And so it comes down to a rationing strategy of always having to assess which is the most important activity at that point, whether you have a later opportunity to do any of that stuff. And yes, quite often being making the disconnection between disabled people and society greater, because the inability to do both things at the same time automatically distinguishes you from the mass of people going to work, as an example. And unfortunately, it doesn't stop at the start of the day. It is an ongoing process, and as I said to you before, it repeats itself over and over again over the course of days, months, and years. And unfortunately for those of us born with a condition who will probably die with that same condition in tow, you could say decades of repetitive frustration and not just smoothly going through life. London is not my favourite place to be, and so some of the attitudes that I express in terms of interacting with it as a member of society are predicated by that, but I don't believe that it is just my perception as somebody who wasn't born here and therefore is not as used to it, because I've spoken to people who are lifelong Londoners and new arrivals and everyone in between, and people have their different tolerance levels. Everyone seems to end up from those groups I was describing, though, with this need to ration the activities they do. And it also means that the working day is, I will say, address that first, the working day should be more flexible for people who suffer from a shorter period of time before fatigue takes over, and that includes me, at least physically, but it isn't yet. And so there are quite actively, actually, people who struggle through an 8-hour work day by the end of which they aren't capable of working anymore, but they still are in their offices, in their other workplaces, doing the work that society requires of them because of an assessment by someone generally who doesn't have a disability that they are fit for work. And some kind of a attitude that not working is somehow always worse than working for society as a whole. I have to say, I don't see how giving someone crippling pain for the last 2 hours of an 8-hour shift is beneficial for society at all. And there are other things. I talked about the assessment dynamic, that the assessments aren't done by disabled people. I will add, in terms of things like the work capacity assessment, which is very much in the news at the moment, those assessments are not even done by people with long-term and intimate knowledge of the disabled person themselves. They are done by appointed medical personnel, appointed by central government to assess things, and who work to quotas for how many people are deemed fit to work, and whose target is to make as many people work as possible. Now, this is very much in the news because the disability benefit system is very much in the news. The Welfare Reform Act is going through Parliament at the moment in its deeply flawed state, and last week the consultation on the reform to the disability living allowance came through. My good friends at the Broken of Britain made the observation that the consultation was chronologically disconnected, my words, not theirs, but chronologically disconnected from the actual act of reforming. The bill to reform the welfare state actually had reached an advanced stage in Parliament before the consultation actually finished, which is an odd definition of consultation to my mind. I'm going to have a short break. We will have a musical interlude, and I will be back with you in a second.
Thank you.
if you don't believe me that the objections to quite a lot that's going on in government policy circles are widespread, then just bear with me a moment whilst I read out to you the wide range of organisations that actually published a report on the back of the Welfare Reform Bill objecting to it. We have Action for Blind People, Action for ME, Age UK, Arthritis UK, Breast Cancer Care, Carers UK, and the Child Poverty Action Group, to name but clearly the start of a long alphabetical list. We have our friends from Disability Lib and the UK Disabled People's Council, also clearly evident in the March the 26th march and around and about objecting to the direction of traffic. I have to say, I also should add at this point, talking of my own personal experiences, that I've even been subject to abuse in my own neighbourhood. Now, I don't think that's a particularly good indication of where London as a city is right now, if I'm getting abuse for being disabled in this city. I wish I was the only person, but it doesn't appear to be the case. Now, it also has to be said, and I did apologise for not bringing the guest I'd hoped to on air, but part of the dynamic of that reason is just the challenges of doing this programme being as it is, by disabled people, for disabled people, and about disability. Everyone at almost every stage reaches that plateau of spoonyism that I was describing before, where challenges arise that you weren't prepared for. Somebody told me last week that the definition of activism is proving to the authorities that you can achieve more than they expect of you. To which I responded that that made all disabled people activists. And I don't think I'm dissuaded from that view. There are also fundamental technical difficulties. I was hoping to bring you specific music as general for this programme, but I actually had a technical problem bringing that music to you. So that just kind of sums up the place we are with this. I apologise for the slightly staccato nature of me talking, but I'm trying to do several things at once. If you bear with me, I have the statement from the Broken of Britain in front of me, just to sum up how exactly it fits with what I was describing it as. And I quote from the Fit for Work campaign being run actually today by the Broken of Britain. If you want to join in, that then you hashtag Fit for Work at the end of your conversation. Having spent the first half of this programme talking to chiefly to non-disabled people to try and explain how difficult things are. Those of you that are disabled, if you have an experience of interaction with the working world where you feel like your inability to work easily is not being understood, hashtag Fit for Work at the end of a Twitter entrant, and it will be tracked by the Broken of Britain. They explain, today the Broken of Britain are asking people to take part in an awareness-raising campaign about fitness to work. Sue Marsh has written a post about her working life, which is available at Benefit Scrounging Scum. Google that, you'll find it. And the illustrious Callier Franklin, of whom we have spoken to before, has described applying for a job herself and the fact that, given there is a long gap, and this is another area that I can briefly reflect on, there's a long gap between the now and the last time she was in frequent employment, that actually the longer the time span goes, the harder it is to get back on that particular horse, especially if, and I would add, especially in not just work related, if you go in any situation and suddenly your baseline has changed, then it's a lot more difficult to adapt to. And I would say that that brings me back onto my personal experiences. As I said, most of my life I've been disabled. I was born with cerebral palsy, but I actually would argue that it's only in the last 3 or 4 years that I've realised the social model where society creates disability had applied, because it was society's boundaries that had prevented me from doing things smoothly rather than just the cerebral palsy with which I was endowed. And that change in speed is something that I know other people have reflected on. It's not necessarily something I would have touched on with Christine, because I think there's a difference between lifelong conditions and acquired ones. But I have a lifelong condition that actually changed speed suddenly, and I went from dealing with everything perfectly fine to not dealing with stuff well at all. And it's that adjustment that often people don't realise will basically come to us all. That comes to everyone as they get older. And as someone previously said, they described the ranks of people who aren't disabled as the not yet disabled. When it does come to people, if the adjustment process is as rapid as it was with me, then the strategies of coping are fundamentally different than dealing with a condition that you've always had. And I know that because I've played both sides of that particular fence. And without occupational therapy, I would have struggled to deal with the wonders of cerebral palsy. But I did, and occupational therapists have helped. And I have to say, next door to us here on Borough High Street is the British Association of Occupational Therapists. And they will be popping in to have a chat next month when their chief executive is available. So stay tuned to the Twitter feed @LightChronic and the Facebook page, facebook.com/LightChronicles. And we will be having that conversation about how to cope when you hit a wall that you weren't expecting to see ever. But in my case, like I said, there were two processes of adjustment, because one was expected. If you're born 2 months premature, the general expectation is that things won't be particularly easy. So that happened. And then the secondary process of adjusting to unexpected levels of pain and not coping, emotional and physical pain, that actually the healthcare system in the UK isn't as well set up to cope with, in my experience, having been in various places in the country. And so, yes, that is worth just reflecting on. If you've known someone all your life and you see that they're struggling, it doesn't just mean that they should be able to cope, because they've always been able to cope until now. Disabled people are fantastic improvisationalists, but we all have our coping strategies, but we also all have our thresholds of pain. All of us. As I say, we all have technical difficulties, and we all have levels that we can cope with before things stop working completely, either psychologically or walking down the street physically. So I guess that would be how I would wrap this up. Once again, I apologise for not being able to bring you Christine. I would urge everyone to visit www.butyoudontlooksick.com and read The Spoon Theory. It is enlightening, even for those of us who've travelled parts of that road. And I hope to get her on the show at some point in the undetermined future. As I said, at some point in the next month, I believe it might well be 2 weeks' time, we will have someone from the British Association of Occupational Therapists. My Twitter feed is @lightchronic. If you have a question that you want them to answer, then feel free to ask it and I will pass it on. Otherwise, I will just be reflecting myself on what exactly it is to be an occupational therapist. And we also have another heads up that the quite frankly impossible to describe sign mark is in the house in the near future, is performing in London, and I very much hope to have him on the show. So on that note, and presuming that this will work better than the CD rack did before, I will leave you with 4 minutes and 20 seconds of sign mark against the wall. Once again, I am Tim Abbott. This has been Technical Difficulties. Whatever happens, wear your scars with pride, and remember, we all have technical difficulties. Goodbye.